Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Delicious Talk. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. Hope everybody's having a beautiful weekend. Today is Friday. The eagle flies. Thank God it's Friday. And I have a very special show this evening. Very special show. It's concerning men who have been violated and were afraid to come forth and, you know, kept it secret for years. I also have a book out that I've written that touches that subject matter. If there are any children in the room listening to this show tonight, please excuse them. This is for mature audience, 18 and up. My co-host should be along shortly. I thank everybody who's listening in. Without further ado, I'm going to get right to my guest. He's a survivor of rape. I'm going to read a little bit of his bio here. His name is Lauren Dew. He's a survivor and overcomer of child sexual abuse, incest, rape, and molestation. He was 4 or 5 years old when he was raped and molested by his teenage brother and his father over a period of time. His father was an ordained Pentecostal elder. You might ask where his mother was. She worked 2 and sometimes 3 jobs to keep food on the table and a roof over their heads. His father worked odd jobs, mostly as a janitor. Other times he was off running revivals and trying to build a church, which he never completed. When he was 36 and his son was 12, he set him down and shared with him the facts of life as the Holy Spirit instructed him to teach him not to touch him as he had been touched. The Lord blessed him with a 12-year-old daughter when he was married to his wife and was 44. Through all his transitions, the Lord made it clear that it was that he was not to touch his children, which includes his grandsons and granddaughters. The Lord has brought healing and deliverance into his life by blessing him to forgive and love his dad, who is deceased, and his brother, who is a pastor. In 2006, 60 years after he was born, he got a breakthrough that Jesus loved him and that can love him, his wife, and others. He's learning to really love. His mission is to spread good news about Jesus Christ's love and expose, confront, and reveal the truth about child sexual abuse and bringing healing and deliverance to perpetrators and victims. So without further ado, I'm going to bring my guest on. Dr. Dew, are you there?
I'm here. Good evening.
How are you?
I'm blessed. Thank you so much. I do appreciate you inviting me to join and be on your program. Thank you.
Well, I do appreciate you coming on because, like I had mentioned earlier, I had written a book about a young man who was adopted into a family, and there was a set of twins, and one of the twins had violated him and had caused his life misery, and he had suppressed it for years until he went to church one Sunday after, you know, him and his wife, they had went to a church, and the sermon had opened old wounds, so he took a 360-degree turnaround in his life and set out to get revenge on his brother and any other men who got in the way of him getting his revenge on his brother. But that's just a story, and your story is real. So first, let's go back to your childhood, Dr. Dew, and let's work it from that point. Because I know you mentioned that it started when you was 4 or 5 years old with your being molested.
You know, I don't know the exact day or year. I just know it was in that time period because of the, number one, what happened and how it happened and where it happened. I grew up in poverty. We lived in a two-bedroom house, and in this two-bedroom house that was basically a shotgun house, in our bedroom, I lived in the bedroom with my brother, who was 9 years older than I, and my sister. And my sister slept on a cot, and my brother and I had bunk beds.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's where it all started. At least I pictures and senses of all of that and things that happened.
Okay, who abused you first? Was it your father or your brother or your sister?
Well, I believe it was my father. And the reason let's put it this way, I remember what happened with him, and his whole thing was, this word I could never get it out of my head, even when I was repressing things. I'm not sure how I used it, but the word that he said, I'm going to diddle you, and that word just stuck with me, and where he would touch me and fondle me and just, you know, play with me, and I could actually, you know, as an older person, after things, my memory started coming back and I started placing two and two together, I actually could actually smell, I mean, it's really weird, but I could actually smell the stuff that was going on. And then what I think the most dramatic thing was the fact that the feeling, I could feel him putting his finger in me and trying to put his thing in me. And I could never in my life have anyone do any kind of, I know a lot of people are into anal sex. I could never stand anal sex, couldn't even stand somebody to touch me. I just get really furious if someone even touched me there. And yeah.
So, did your father actually penetrate you, or was he just using his finger and objects on you, or how did that go?
I remember him using his finger and objects. I remember seeing him doing things when we would. He worked in this. I don't know if you read the book yet, what I gave you, but he would go and masturbate or get off. I call it getting off until I learned what the word was, masturbate, in the store, because mm-hmm. he seemed to always be working in these women's stores. And I call them huge dolls, but they were actually mannequins
mm-hmm.
that I would see him messing with, and then I started messing with. And that's what I saw. That's what I would sense. And it's like, wow.
Wow. So your father, you said he was a Pentecostal minister. How long had he been that before he started molesting you, or was he always that when he did start molesting you?
All I ever know is a church. When I grew up in that house, we had just lived before in I call it a shack, but it was a little house that my dad actually built that was behind the church. And so all I remember is a church. All I remember is always going to church. I remember being at the church. I remember people from the church and us living in this shack behind the church. You know, it's like always there. And then we finally, when I say we as a family, my father was able to get this lot, my father and mother, that was there in Pasadena. I don't know how they got it. I don't know if it was given to us or if they bought it. That part of the story I don't remember. And I haven't even thought to ask my sister. I might do that. But we had this lot, so they moved this house that he built from where the church was over to this lot, and it sat all the way back on the lot. And this is significant because I remember this house sitting there, because when they finally put on the foundation, and my dad, he did all the stuff, and that's what's so amazing to me about my father, his ability as a man to do those things. Even I remember him bragging or hearing them bragging about him carrying 50-pound bags of cement, because he was a much shorter man than even I am, and yet his work was always seemed to be in these, either trying to do little construction works, odds and ends, or working, you know, in the women's clothing store as a janitor.
Okay, let's talk about your brother. When did he started molesting you and raping you?
That started when we were in this house. That's what I remember in the house, him getting in the bed or getting me in the bed. And I think the most striking time that I remember, I literally remember, and was able to confirm this behavior was when I talked to my sister and I talked to her. Typically, we talk every Saturday. And I was telling her, I said, you remember the time brother came home drunk or half drunk or whatever he was, and he ate this raw bacon. And that night, he took the bacon and greased me up. And that's what tried to go in, or did go in, I guess. I basically kind of blocked that out of my mind. But he put the grease and stuff from bacon on me and penetrated me.
Well, let me ask you this. Did all of them molest you in a group setting, or was just at times when your father would do it to you and your brother would do it to you and your sister, or how did that go?
My sister didn't do anything to me in terms of any kind of penetration or any of that kind of stuff. No, it was never a group setting. That, at least I don't remember it being that. I remember the situations with my dad, because my dad would be home could be home at different times. My brother, being 9 years older than I was, he would be off to I guess school or wherever he would be. He was always in some kind of jail or something, in and out of jail and stuff. So no, it was never any kind of a group thing.
Where did you remember? Where do you think your brother got the idea of wanting to, you know, do those things to you? Did he ever see your father, you know, doing that, or where did he get that idea from?
In the last 10, 20 years, I finally have come to the conclusion that it had to come from my father because of what I discovered about my father, my father's grandfather, that what he had done. And so I think it was something that happened. I don't know, you know, he never said anything to me, he never told me, but from what I've learned in all my studying of this behavior and of this action, it can be a learned behavior. And that he had to get it from somewhere. He didn't get it from, you know, my mother. And I think he got it from my father. Or somebody that he had visited. Because he was in jail a lot.
Right. Well, was you the only child that was being molested? Do you think maybe your father was molesting your brother as well?
I think he could have. I think he had to have done something when they were back east before I came on the scene. See, all of us were 9 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
My sister was 18 years older than I am. And I actually think my father had done something to my sister or my brother. I think more that my brother may have done something to my sister. But, again, no one has said anything. I don't know. But they had something.
Okay, let's talk about your mom.
Mm-hmm.
Did she ever know about this? And if she did, when did you tell her? And how did you tell her? And at what age were you when you told her, if you ever said anything to your mom about it?
You know, I never did. What's really strange, and I'm glad you asked that question, is people always think, well, where was your mom? Is that in my later life, I used to talk to my mom a lot as an adult, and we would talk about life, and she would say, you know, I really wish I had spent more time with you and hadn't worked so, and that I really wish we had hugged more and just been closer. And that was kind of our conversation. And she said, she knew that my brother, because everybody was always afraid of him, even my mother and father were afraid of him because he was basically a gangster. And so we never did talk about that. You know, the thing that I got most from my mother, at least I remember of our time together when I was a kid, would be that when she'd come home from those places when she worked, she did the catering work, and she catered the white folks' parties. And I remember her bringing home food, or when she'd go do the day work, and she'd bring home food. And because she had learned to cook so well, I'd watch her. I'd try to hang out when I could and watch her. And so I learned to cook, started trying to cook when I was 7. But to talk to her, no, we never did get to talk.
Wow. Well, I was reading a little bit in the book, I think it was Teddy Bear Stolen Innocence, where your sister, these twins, would come over, and they would play with your penis. And to one point, you sort of like look forward to that. How old were you at that particular time?
You know, I don't remember how old, but I just know that it became exciting. It became exciting, and it was, you know. And I look back, and I've wondered about that, but then I realized that because being human, the body does betray us, and so when touched enough, it becomes aroused, if not, you know, tortured, as I've seen some people actually tortured. I thank God that part didn't happen to me. But I know some people who have been tortured. And so this whole thing that they did was kind of an exciting thing. And I think it's part of what the whole process of me becoming promiscuous, you know, I don't know before you read that, but when at age seven, and I remember this, my very first time of having oral sex with a little girl.
Mm-hmm. When you were seven?
Seven, yeah. She was five, and the reason I can remember the time is because that was when, remember I said we had this shack of a house that we lived in, and mm-hmm. in Southern California, back then they were selling these houses in the early 50s for a dollar to move them out of the way for the freeways, all those freeways mm-hmm. that were built. My parents mm-hmm. got a house for a dollar, and we moved it on the lot. And when it finally was finished, we moved into it. And in 52, I know the year, 52, 53, I was 7 years old. And this young girl that was, and her mother and brother rented the little shack in the back. And that started a long time of sex play that got me involved with the little girl. And because under the shack was, I can just see it now as I'm sitting here talking, and it was green, I never even thought it was the ugliest green. beside the shack was like a little, I call it like a little house or a little storage place. And you mm-hmm. could go in there, and that's where we would go in there, and we would play house.
Wow. Your father is dead. How long has he been dead?
He died in 1997. And
okay, go on, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No.
How did you feel, when did the molestation and the rape stop? What age were you when it stopped? Do you remember that?
All I can say, I think it's somewhere between that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, somewhere in there is where all of it was going on. And the most clear thing was when I started messing with the little girl at 7. And so somewhere in there.
So that's when it has stopped.
I think so. I don't recall much more of them because it kind of shifted from all of that to all the sex stuff that I was into with mm-hmm. the little girl and the kids in the neighborhood. And it just, it was horrific.
So how did you feel about your father after he had stopped?
You know, the only thing that I was so pronounced in my life was that at some point I just began to have this intense hatred. I couldn't stand him. I wanted to kill him. And I know that I got married at 18, got out of high school. 6 weeks after I was graduating from high school, I was married and out of the house and moved away and moved, not, you know, out of the state, but just moved out of their house to our own place. And mm-hmm. for many years, I really, once we got it, we finally got a really nice place. I started really doing well. I hated him. Didn't want him to come to my house. And for about 10 years, every time he came, it was always some argument or something. And so it just stopped. He stopped, you know, my mother could come or would come. But he just wasn't welcome. And I didn't know, I didn't ever put all that together, why I was so angry at him. You know, mm-hmm. why I just couldn't stand him. I thought it was the church. I thought it was because he was so strict as a minister that, you know, I couldn't do anything. Didn't get to go to, couldn't go to a dance, couldn't go to the movies, couldn't drink, couldn't anything. And yet my brother did everything. He was big enough
wow.
to go.
So your father never apologized to you? You guys never talked about it when you got older or anything?
You know, I just put a picture of my father on the web. I think it was yesterday. And I put on that picture, and I don't even know when this picture was taken. It was some of the many pictures that had come to me from the family heirloom of my cousin and the matriarch of our family.
Mm-hmm.
And I put in the picture, I said, this is my dad. I loved him. And he died. I never got to tell him I love him because my brother blocked him from talking to me. And the reason this, I know this because we lived in Colorado. My dad lived, and brother, all they lived in California. And back then we had a answering machine on our phone. We didn't have the phones like I have now. And there was this call on the phone. And it said, Lauren. My dad always called me Lauren. And he said, I want to talk to you. But he didn't leave a number. And my wife heard it.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, being a nurse, you know, we had even offered to take care of him, like she took care of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no number. I didn't know what nursing home he was in. I didn't know where he was. They didn't tell me anything. It was, my brother kept everything to himself. And my sister, at that time, I don't remember if I don't know what happened, what was going on with, well, she was angry at me too. They were all angry at me. I never did get to talk to my dad, but I know he called, and that made me know that he wanted to talk.
What was the anger that your brother and sister had towards you?
There seemed to always be this jealousy, mainly for my brother, jealousy, and this, I don't know, I could never, as if I was always, like, you know, my mother really, really was cared for me, and I know she loved me, and I almost think that she seemed like she loved me more than she loved the rest of them. But that I was special, and I don't know if that's because when I was born, my dad was given an ultimatum by the doctor that only one of us would live, either my mother or myself, and my dad told him they're both going to live. And, you know, this is what I was told that he did, that he went to his minister friends and called them all over the country and prayed and, you know, we both lived. My mother lived 50 years after that, and I'm here still 60-some years later. So all I could think about was this jealousy, envy, because of my talents. I mean, I don't know. You know, there's some people that just seem to always, or at least for me, I've seen this in others, and I've seen it for myself, don't like you. And it's like, what have I done to you? I can think of all the things I've given them, all the things I try to do to please them, all the things I try to do to be nice. And I don't know what, I could never put my finger on it, what it was. And my sister and I, we like I said, we talk now every Saturday, if not more than that. And, you know, we have reconciled. And I wrote her a letter of forgiveness because of something that I did towards her when I didn't know any better, you know, as a kid. So, and she didn't even remember it. That's what's so funny. But I know it happened.
Well,
Lord, just get it resolved.
Right. Well, you had also mentioned that your sister had molested you. In which way did she molest you?
Well, see, when I say she, I really thought this whole thing of colors, because they used to call me a pretty baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she would dress me up in the female colors or the pretty colors. And that's really all that I remember her doing. She never touched me.
Okay.
That's all her. That's why I said it was her thing was just because I was, you know, I was, she's 18 years old and she was my mother. I always thought really that she was my mom because I always saw her and she took care of me as best she could.
Okay. So your mom is deceased as well?
Yeah, my mother died the year before my dad in 1996.
Okay.
And I was able to, actually 6 months before she died, my wife and I and our daughter went from where we lived in Southern California up and spent 2 weeks with my family. I didn't know she was that sick. My, that's something else. They always kept everything kind of secret. Even my sister at that point didn't really tell me how sick my mother was,
mm-hmm.
how what had happened. And so 5 months after that, she was gone.
Who were you closer to, your father or your mom, in spite of him molesting you? Who was the closer parent you were to?
I think my mother. I think my mother.
Did you ever regret that you didn't tell her what your father did to you?
You know, I don't regret it. I think it would have just been a confirmation to her about his behavior, because one of the things that seemed to always happen is our home was like an open door, and there was
mm-hmm.
always some minister, some female evangelist in and out of our home. And I remember the time when we had one female evangelist there that I don't think I was living there or visiting, and I knew that this woman, I don't know if she's having an affair with my dad or if she had an affair or what, but she really treated my mother bad, and it was just a mess. And
wow.
Then I would see my dad. I remember actually the last time that I spent all that time with my wife and I and my daughter with my mother and them, I actually saw my dad go into some other woman's house just down the street because my mother couldn't get up and get out. And he,
mm-hmm.
and then I later learned that he did this. He had been doing this, which I found out later from my niece who lived with my dad and mother and my mother and my sister rather, that my mother would send her, this niece, with my dad because he'd pick up women, and it was just always some mess with him and some woman.
Wow.
So
also
I knew that something was going on. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
That something was going on.
Oh, yeah, something was going on. Because I'll tell you one thing that I learned even later in life. I was a teenager, actually a teenager. I was 18, 19, so a young adult, married. And I was very friendly to this other married woman, but we never mm-hmm. had sex. But I would, because of she being the leader of the youth department, I would go to her home, which now, I mean, I learned later that was really not good, not a good thing. But I,
mm-hmm.
you know, because everybody was just friendly. They were so friendly, and at least I thought they were. And I would go to her home, and we have our meetings and the planning for the church. And then I saw my dad's car once parked a little ways away from there, because I found out later he had this habit of going around to people's homes and checking on them. Well, I was silenced, excommunicated from the church, because he said that I was having an affair with this woman, and I wasn't. And only to find out in the last 20, 30 years, I guess, whenever it was, my brother finally told me, because we would talk. There were times we would talk, and it's like, wow, this is good. But he told my dad, did that, but he was the one. My dad was the one that was having the affair with the woman, not me.
Wow.
And that my brother, was the, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And I got,
no,
and
go
I
on.
Got to communicate it. Yeah, and I got to put out the church. Or silence. They called it silence. I had, and I was the musician for the church, so I still had to go to church every Sunday and go to church. You know, I didn't have to, but I did because that's what I thought I had to do. And I would go and couldn't say anything. And for the first part of it, I couldn't even play. They had nobody even play for the church. And yet, you know, I had to go and sit. And people said, why don't you go play? I said, because I'm silenced. But, yeah, so then I found out my brother had took the church away from my dad, or they say it was mutual. They say the churches came together. I don't know. But whatever happened, and my brother told me that he eventually had to silence my dad for the mess he was doing with the women and stuff. So it was mm-hmm. it was not something that just stopped once I mean, with me it stopped, but stuff was going on. We were on a trip, my wife and I, we've been married now, this will be our almost 19 years, going on 20 years. We were on a mm-hmm. trip several years ago in a city, And this woman, she let the cat out of the bag that she was kind of my dad's, one of his girlfriends. Mm-hmm. And then my sister shared something with me. She said, well, I knew he had a girlfriend in the, where we live in the state, but I can't find her number because our brother took my, when my dad died, my brother took his black book.
Mm-hmm.
So there are numbers of family in there that we've never been able to get in touch with. And then, of course, like my sister said, she knew there was a girlfriend in the state, but she couldn't remember her name. So stuff like that just keep happening. Or people, I'll see somebody, or they'll call me and say, well, you know, this happened, or this is going on. And it's like, oh, Lord. It's always,
right, because I was reading in Teddy Bear Stolen Innocence, I don't know if it was a guy that was in a choir or someone was in a church, and you had to go to the bathroom, and it was down this dark hallway. You hated going down there, and this guy was in the bathroom, and you could see out of your peripheral vision how he was watching you, and when you looked over and saw his penis, you got a little bit excited. But what was that all about? Because in the book that I wrote, this young man, he's a man now. Well, he was a man when he had went into the bathroom, and a guy was watching him as he urinated at the urinal, and the guy had said something to him, but this guy was on the down low. The guy who was watching you, was he a gay person or on a down low, or did you know?
I would suspect he was, if he was on the down low, I didn't know, because if he tried to touch me there, I would have really raised some cane. But
mm-hmm.
he was more, and I remember this, more into playing with himself, and I call it now rubbing, I called it then rubbing. As you know, kid, you don't know the technical terms, but it
right.
was, I think, more like frottage or that kind of thing. That's what he was into, and he was this man had, I think he had, I don't know how many kids, lots of kids. He was just a sexual machine, and a musician. He was one of the choir directors and a musician.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation and take calls if anybody has any questions or comments, okay?
All righty.
Rain, and you said you protect me from heartache.
welcome back. That's Jennifer Holiday. I'm sorry, Jennifer Hudson, where you at? Okay, my special guest this evening is Dr. Drew, a survivor and overcomer of rape molestation. And he's here telling us his story, so we'll get right back into that. Dr. Drew, I also read in the Stolen Innocence that your mom had the gift of prophecy.
Yes, she was gifted, and I'm sensing that it was from birth, as I have been, but yes, she was. And because of the environment that she was in the church and how they had this whole thing about men, you know, kind of being everything, she was not as recognized back then as she should have been. But I can remember people over the years that tell me stories of things that she would say. My niece that lived with them for a while when they were growing up, that my mother would say things, and whatever she said, it always was. It always happened. And so she ministered to people. I remember there were some, you know, there's always one or two, thank heavens, that on the one hand, they seem to be progressive, and on the other hand, who knows? But she would go and watch over some of the church. There was this one friend of my dad, kind of a strange thing, too. But whenever this man would be out of the state or out of wherever for a week or two, he would ask my mom to come and watch his church. And she would, and she would get to use her gift. She was really, you know, for someone who... I don't think she finished the fourth or fifth grade, and that's true for her and my dad both. They didn't, and for someone, they read. She, before she died, she received an honorary doctorate for her work as an educator in the church. And you know, at their level, I understand it, but she really studied. But yes, she used her gift whenever she could.
Oh, okay. If you have any questions or comments for Dr. Drew, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877. Again, that number is 646-652-2877. And hit the 1, that'll put your hand up, and I will call on you. Okay, you had mentioned when we had a conversation, J.L. King. He's the guy who wrote the book... I can't even think of the name of the book, Men on the Down Low or something like that.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, because it seems that you went in a whole different direction. When some men get raped, they may become gay or on the down low. How did you feel about, did you have any thoughts in your mind about going that in that direction, or, you know, how did you feel about it?
Well,
you
kind of mentioned a couple of things. What happened that you talked two things. One thing, in terms of the down low, that's kind of a whole different thing. And some men go that way. And I don't know if those men have been molested or raped or anything that's happened, or if that's just in their nature to be, if they're down low and married, bisexual. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened to me as a result of all of what I went through, I became promiscuous in my behavior and just became, you know, some people say, there's a term that they use, but it's compulsive. This is the term that's the better term, because sex is something we're really born with. It's a natural thing that we have. It's an innate thing as a human being. And so it just opened the floodgates for me as a young person, and I just had sex however, whenever I could, and that went on, that behavior carried on, even, you know, when I received Christ at 11, and even when I was in church teaching, and at 13, I'm saved, you know, 11, I got saved, you know, meaning received Christ, spoke in tongues, got baptized, all that, and the Lord was still dealing with me, but I was just a sexual animal, and trying everything. I mean, so my thing was sex, whether it was, and it was sex with little boys, sex with little girls, sex with I had one time I had a girlfriend who was 20 years older than I was. I was 15 or 16. She was 35.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just sex, just whenever I could, whoever and whatever I could get off. And again, sorry to be so graphic, but whenever I could, just a physical release, I just could not seem to get enough of sex. And
mm-hmm.
so I went off the deep end on that way. And even at 18, married, and, you know, saying for 5 years, I tried to focus myself just on my wife, even though I was, you know, when I told you what happened, but I
mm-hmm.
still had this drive in me. So, yeah, my thing was that. And my identity, the thing that I think you're saying, though, is that sometimes, for some of us, we have a challenge in knowing if we are a straight person, if we are a gay person, you know, knowing who we are and what we are. And I went through
right.
that challenge with identity crisis. But I always wanted women. I always wanted, I won't be as graphic as I was as a child, but I always wanted what
right.
a woman had. And I could
right.
not get enough. So the thing with boys and effeminate boys and cutie pies and all that stuff, it was just always looking for the pretty woman and her. And so I always leaned that way. And so, you know, as I started to really, the Lord said, when I backslid from the church for a while, but yet I was still going to church, but I was out of the Pentecostal church. But when the Lord got my attention and I got back on track, He said, get in my word.
Mm-hmm.
He said, study my word. And that's when I began to understand that, you know, to really understand that I'm, the different components that we are as a person. And I began to do the study and to learn that, yes,
mm-hmm.
I'm a sexual creature. And, yes, my behavior, I've chosen to be heterosexual. And that's just where my direction has been and is. And I'm very thankful to have been in a relationship, been married now for this 19 years. And yet my first time around was 24 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and while I was married all those 24 years, 19 years of those years, I was still promiscuous. Still, I was a mess. It was only God, as I look back on my life, kept me alive, kept me from really from being killed, being annihilated, walking
wow.
into the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wow. Well, do you think that there are degrees of rape? Because I was raped when I was 15, and it was by a stranger, and I also was molested when I was 16 by a doctor. Now, I know of I have a few girlfriends who were raped by their biological fathers, and one of my girlfriends had turned into a lesbian, and she can't stand men, you know, behind the fact of her being, you know, raped and molested by her father. That was the reason for my question. When I was raped, you know, like I said, it was by a total stranger, and I shut down, and I couldn't be with dark men for some reason, because he was dark. This guy who had raped me, he was dark. He was really dark, and I could not stand, you know, to be with dark men or even to talk to dark men for years, you know. So finally when I think I was in my 40s when I sort of like, because I had suppressed it and didn't talk about it to anybody, even the family, you know, the family, they swept it under the carpet. It was like, you know, nothing had ever happened. I never got therapy or anything like that. But I know that I did not want to be with dark-skinned men for years, you know. And recently, maybe within the last, I guess in the last 20 years, I, you know, started being with, you know, not actually dark men as dark as he was, but, you know, men who were darker than what I had been with. And, you know, and as far as being a stranger, you know, I don't know how I could handle it if it had been, say, my father or my brother. You know, that's why I'm, you know, saying that there are degrees in rape, and also when, and if a child is raped, there's, you know, there's a difference there, but not to say that, you know, rape is rape regardless, but it's just different degrees in it, you know. Do you agree, or?
Let me share with you that you're absolutely correct. I believe there is, and there are some people that would not agree with that, but if you think back about what happened to me and how I suppressed things, but there was this anger and this, I always had a plan to kill my father, to do away with my father. And the same with my brother. I was always trying to figure out how to kill him, even though once my brother, I was down in life, and I end up living with my brother of all people and his wife and their kids. And he was dying, and I was awake in the middle of the night because people always said, well, they knew that I could pray and have the gift of healing and would pray for folks to be fine. Woke me up, prayed for him. He came out of his asthma attack. He wasn't dying anymore. I went back and I went back to sleep instead of trying to kill him. But my point is, I was always in the back of my mind trying to think how to do them in. And if the only thing that did it for me, took away that anger, and I can understand that lady being a lesbian, and her feeling, and many women that are lesbians because of either their biological father or their mother, biological mother, doing things to them, touching them, having sex, was the gift of God that intervened in my life. Because if that had not have happened, if that day in my life had not have happened, this conversation would not be, we wouldn't be having it today. I can just tell you that. And so the touch that you had, the rape that you had, because it was a situation where possibly, I don't know if you were on a date or you were supposed to be kind of, you know, getting together and it went south because this person was whacked, would be a little different, you know, because you were, you know, possibly getting together. And then, of course, you said the rape happened. Those things, that was outside the family. But when it happens and it's your family, there's something inside of us, in our head, I don't know where it is, that we finally learn they're not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to take advantage of us. They're not supposed to do us that way, and then tell us, you know, you don't tell anybody, and this is our secret, and all the stuff that people do. And so it's really different, but yet it's the same because it's rape. It was unwanted, unasked for, unsolicited, just unnecessary on the part of, you know, the child, the young person. The adult, in my opinion, and I wrote my first book, the adult that does that to a child is always wrong. And I think that, let me qualify that. In my first book, we have talked about it. I think there's going to come a time because of what's happening in our society with them lowering the age of consent, that it's going to get to a point, though, because our children are so much more aware of sexual issues and so much more alert, that there's going to come a point when it's going to be really questioned of, you know, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, because we have some little girls that look very mature.
Right.
And the parents dress them. And I'm not blaming the parents. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I'm simply saying they allow them to dress a certain way in a provocative manner, and they're budding, and they're, you know, and stuff happens. Well,
right. It's
going to come a point where this age of consent is going to create some real serious challenges where it may not always be the adult that's wrong because of what's happening in our society, continuing to lower that age, which makes it more convenient for the perpetrators and for all of these people that have some serious mind challenges.
Wow.
So yeah, I do agree with you that the pain that you went through, the pain, the phobia, all what you experienced was real, and it, a blockage goes up, and it's like like I was saying, if I, when I, whenever I could smell something, or if somebody would even, if my wife tried to touch me, and this is why I, some women are very lovable. Some women are very sensuous, and so they, when they're loving you, they may love your whole body, and you know that's just a way of loving a wife, a man and a wife, and so.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if I get touched, I just freeze up. So
mm-hmm.
there's still that something still there that reminds me, and so I don't want that. Same with you. You see that black man or dark man, and you tense up, or you used to tense up. And now maybe
right.
now you're talking about it, and that's I deal with that on my program, Say a Word About This, where I'm doing this thing, I'm teaching weekly on sex in the Bible. And I'm going through it because we have this blockage, and until we start to confront it, that's why I wrote that first book, Expose, Confront, and Reveal the Truth. You know, you said, and everybody, hush, hush, they, taboo, they wouldn't talk about it in your family. So
right.
the more you don't talk about it, well, the more it goes inside, and the more it goes inside, the more pain it can be there, the more, you know, you're holding all this bottle of knots inside of you. And then, but now you've started to deal with it. Even if your family haven't, you've dealt with it. And so you
mm-hmm.
release that pain. And possibly you've done as I finally did, as the Lord had me do. I forgave my father. I forgave my brother. And just released it, all that back. And so all of that anger that was all knotted inside of me, because I used to have I could feel it. People, some folks, I guess, could even see it, that could, were in the spiritual things, but there would be this whole knot in my stomach, just like it was a real knot, and that's what was happening with you, something similar to that. And so when that's finally released, it goes, and then you have the peace, now you can deal, and you're able. It's more, maybe not totally, but you're getting there versus still carrying the pain of the perpetrator. Because when
right.
you keep that stuff in, you're carrying all of their stuff. They've gone on to do to the next person, to the next people, or whatever. But you've not said anything, so you're holding on to it. And that's
right.
why my thing is, what God has given me to do with my wife is to expose it, to bring it out. He told me to talk to the perpetrator, talk to the victim, soon to be victor, so that they can be set free and not remain in that turmoil, in that trouble.
Right. Well, I've forgiven the guy who raped me in my heart, but in my mind it's still there, because the simple fact, there's just been so many other things going on since he has raped me. For instance, the night that he had raped me, I was with a couple of my girlfriends, and one of the girls who was with me was a witness in the when we went to court for it. And I'm going to make this story as short as possible, but now this happened when I was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The next time I saw this guy, I was like in my 40s, I think 45, 46, something like that. And I really didn't even recognize him, because the night when he raped me, I that was my first time ever seeing him. And I didn't know him, didn't know his name or anything. And so anyway, this girlfriend of mine, she went to court for me and testified in my behalf. And he got the Youth Act, which meant back in the day that they would lock you up until you were 20, 21, and they would let you go thinking that you were rehabilitated and this and that,
mm-hmm.
ready to go back out into society. Well, this guy, another girlfriend, like I said, was with us that night. She was telling me a few things that how he had been in a sane asylum, and, you know, he was just not a good person, let's just put it like that. And come to find out, the girl who had testified at the trial for me, they are in a relationship to this day. And when she told me that, I asked her, do you ever talk to him? Do y'all ever talk about when he had raped me? And she told me yes, and he told her that, you know, he was young and it was a mistake and he had apologized. But I said, well, he never apologized to me. But to come to find out this was years and years later, he had apologized to my brother because the night that it happened, my brother and a friend had went looking for him. And I don't even know when he had apologized to my brother because, like I said, this was so many years later when I found out this information. So I said to her, well, let me say this. This is exactly what I said to her. I said, let me say this. Always remember, a leopard's spots never change. So she said, well, he's you know, grown and that's behind him, this and that, you know. So I said, well, all right. About 3 or 4 months later, she's calling me, telling me how he's raping her, sodomizing her, you know, just doing all these things to her that he basically, and I honestly believe that I'm not the first person that he's ever raped either, because he's still carrying on those things even to this day, you know, because I've spoken to the girl's sister not too long ago, and she was telling me how he gets drunk and calls her all kind of, you know, all out of her name, and, you know, just he's just not a good person. And I told her, you know, just always remember that. So therefore, you know, like I said, I've forgiven him in my heart, but in my mind, it's just still going to always be on my mind because he's not a good person. And then the fact that he's with the person, you know, that was a friend of mine, and when she told me they were together, it was like she just put a knife in my chest, you know. So, you know, I can understand when people want to forgive and forget and all this and that, you know, but I, like I said, I did forgive him in my heart, but in my mind, I can't. I don't know, you know, if I ever will, but as far as I know now, I have not.
But see, understand, Delicious, that the forgiveness is not for him. It's for you, so that you're free. And
right.
The fact that he was doing what he did, and you even prophesied or spoke those warnings to your friend, and then got the confirmation, it just lets you know that he is the same, I'm going to use this term, animal, same person that he was. He has never received any kind of healing, and he probably never will, because
mm-hmm.
he's a sexually compulsive person. And,
mm-hmm.
and the reason I use that word, make that really clear, because some folks want to say, well, he's addicted. No, addictions happen for alcohol, for drugs. We're not born with a bottle in our mouth, alcohol bottle. We're not born
right.
to drink alcohol. We're not born with a needle in our arm as a baby with cocaine and crank and crack and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we are born with our male and female sexual organs. And
mm-hmm.
so that's normal. I mean, and I hate to use the word normal, but that's how we're born. That's how God created, how the body was made.
Mm-hmm.
And so his continuous use of it in an inappropriate way, or in a way that, you know, lets you see what's happening, just gives you confirmation that, yeah, I let that go. I'm releasing all that spirit from me. And if he chooses to continue living his life as, I'm going to call it an animal, then that's on him. And if no one has, he's not been apprehended and properly dealt with, again, that's something that you can't deal with other than to know that there are people like that, and there are many of them in our society. Our society is really, it's kind of scary at the number of sexual things that go on here in America every day. That's
mm-hmm.
why I do this program. So, yeah. So please understand, the forgiveness is just for you to be released so you don't carry that burden. And in terms of forgetting it, the only reason people say forget it, that's just kind of, you know, what some of black folks talk about. And there is a scripture in Micah 7 where Jesus, or God basically, Micah 7:19, he forgets our mistakes and casts them into the sea of forgetfulness.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there written. So that's what that's all about. That's what God does. But see, we as human beings, It didn't say anywhere that it didn't say to forgive and forget. It just simply says to forgive, and that's mm-hmm. another thing that the church has handled, I think, inappropriately, kind of made a joke of this whole thing of forgiveness. It's real, and it's for the purpose of releasing the person that is in pain, not the perpetrator. That because my brother has never, to this day, acknowledged anything of what happened. Matter of fact, we sent him a Christmas card. I sent everybody Christmas cards, and he sent the mm-hmm. card back last year or the year before and said, "Don't send anything else to this house. I'm not here," or whatever he said on the card.
Wow.
So no, I don't ever. Yeah, I have the card here. It says "Return to Sender," and just big crossed out. His name's on it, and it says "Return to Sender." And he's lived in the same house for 35, almost 40 years. And I know he's there because everybody else knows he's there. And I kept mm-hmm. the card. I said, "Keep it. This is just to let you see just how evil he is." So he's what he is, my brother, and what's happened in his house with his kids and his grandkids. That's what they are. Until they decide to deal with the reality of life, there's nothing I can do other than to love them. At least that's how I look at it. Release the pain. Don't carry that with me because it's not mine. It's theirs. And leave
mm-hmm.
it. So the same with you, that you'll be so much freer by, yeah, you don't forget it. Because remember I said I still can, my wife, she won't touch me in the rear parts, you know, just
mm-hmm.
because I still can get kind of crazy, you know.
Right, right.
But, so same with you. Well, there's still these dark men, so you don't know. But then who knows? There could come a day when one of these dark men turns out to be Mr. Wonderful. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is the forgiveness is for you so that you can have the peace. And your story is so precious, as well as your friend who was raped by her father, all those women that you mentioned that were touched by their biological fathers. And to know that God loves them and they are to love themselves. And the reason that they are the way they are is not something that God has created or God wants, but it's something that actually has been created by the devil to bring turmoil and pain to them. They may not sense that, but, you know, they think they're getting pleasure, but it's not. It's an appeasement. But, yeah,
mm-hmm.
God loves us all and wants the very best for us.
Right. Well, you know, I just, I don't know. Hopefully one day I can, you know, forgive him in my mind. But, you know, it's just that reminder so much because the girlfriend and she has a sister, me and her sister, we basically talk, you know, quite a bit more than I talk with her simply because they are together. But, you know, and then she's telling me, you know, different things that are going on. And it's just one big hot mess of
mm-hmm.
how she even lets this man do her the way that he does her. You know, that's what really pisses me off. Excuse my expression. But, you know, when a woman, because a woman has the power to live her life and to do what she wants to do with her life, opposed to letting a man come in and turn it all upside down and create chaos and turmoil in her life. She has that ability to say when she sees something going wrong, she has the ability to get out and to, you know, look out for herself. She knows these. She knows he's a no good man because the things she has told me about him, how he broke a chair over his sister's back, how he beat his baby's mama up so much until she moved out of town. Now, why would you even want to be with a man and you know these things about him? It would be something different if she didn't know the type of person he was. But she knows these things, and she's even subjected herself to his wrath. So that's,
you know,
what...
You know why? Let me share with you what you're dealing with in this. I'm glad you even went that far with that story. It relates to all the most of the stories that I read and share when I'm teaching on Wednesdays, when I'm teaching, etc. It's one thing. It's sexual compulsivity. It's sexual need. It is a something that you can't I don't know if psychologists have found the answer, but they know that there is this plus minus, there's this attractiveness, and some folks you can't pull them away. You know, you'd almost have to tear them apart. They're so driven by what the other one does for them, and at the detriment of their life, and that's what it sounds like with your friend. And the fact that you keep hearing that, you know, the way that you get away from that, I believe, and this is what's helped me, and actually what the Lord set up, but in that is by stop talking about that stuff, because every time it comes up with her sister and you, I think that's what you said, it opens that wound back up. And if you keep opening a wound up, it's never going to get healed. If you keep opening a wound up, it's never going to get right. And you have to, again, let it go and be glad and thankful that you're free of him, that you didn't become a victim. And you are now free to live your life. But as long as you're talking about with this other person about all this stuff, it's just continuing. You know, I look at my hand, I have wrists, I have two scars of where I was had surgery on my hand because of a ganglion. And, you know, people say, well, you know, the scars are there. You have your scar. But if I wanted, I could, like some people do, sores, they keep messing with it. And what happens? It opens up. So all I would just encourage you to do, if you really want to be free of this, even though you guys may all live in the same town, I don't know, may live in the same city or the same state, it's when this friend comes over, this, you and her friends say, you know, we're not going to talk about this anymore. There's nothing we can do. We'll pray about it. We'll give it to God. But it's not helping either one of us to know all of this pain. And it's bringing more to us. Let's leave it alone. And let's do something fun. Let's do something that's enlightening, something that is building us up to enjoy life. Because we're here to really, we should be happy on this planet. We should be whole on this planet. That's what God's intention was when he put us here. He put Satan here, got here first, and made a mess of it. So then, if you read that story, cleaned it out, and then he put man here. He said, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and et cetera, et cetera. And you can see, we can either take the choice of continuing to be in the pain, continuing to be suffering, continue in that same stuff, or you can say, I've had enough of it. I'm not talking about this anymore. And let it be. And you'll be surprised how your life will start to transition. And there will come a time, if you really do this and just try it for a while, they're going to reach out to you and you say, hey, unless you're ready to make a change and do what's right in the sight of God, the sight of man, I have nothing to do with you. I'm going to go on and live my life and enjoy my grandkids or my kids or whatever you have and come forth. And you'll see, you're going to say, oh, wow, this is so much better than wallowing in that same story over. I don't hang around people that keep bringing stuff up from the past and keep, hey, I'm done. It happened. There's nothing else that we can do about it. We're going forward. And let's see what new things and new adventures and things that we can do that bring life to us, not death. Because talking about that situation is death. It's pain. Misery.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, You Might Get Lucky. It was therapeutic for me to write that book because I am lucky in that book. You know, I wanted to, it was just so many things going through my mind that I wanted to do to this guy until I got to the point of, you know, just saying to myself, well, he did it, it's over with. And then I also wanted to know why, you know, but I guess I'll never know why. You know, just go on and, you know, forget about the why, but it's just something that also has stuck with me because, like I said, I have seen him within this between last year and this year, I've seen him at least three or four times. And one of the times he actually, I could, you know, he was looking at me, but I wasn't looking at him. You know how you can feel somebody looking at you. And I thought that he was going to come up and say something to me. And that's when I was going to take the opportunity to ask him why. But, you know, he never did. But, you know, it's just we're being in the same place, you know, at the same time. And, you know, a few of the, well, all the times that he was where I was at, I never expected to even see him there. And two of the times was at a funeral, and another time was at a reunion, and this was a reunion that we generally have every year. And he isn't even from the neighborhood that I was from, so I didn't really, you know, even expect him to be at the reunion. I saw him at two reunions, as a matter of fact. The first reunion, I saw him, and I didn't recognize him. You know, until my girlfriend had told me who he was. But, you know, he lives in Baltimore. They live up in Baltimore, and I live in Capitol Heights, Maryland, which is about an hour's drive from where they live. So I really, it's not like I, you know, would see him every day on the street or anything like that. It's just in those particular instances that I did see him. And as long as I'm not seeing him, you know, I'm fine. You know, but it just creeps me out, you know, us being, you know, in any enclosed environment, period.
Exactly.
So that's the problem
I'm having
with that.
Because you're still carrying that, because you're still carrying him, you're still carrying his pain, his burden, his actions in you. And until you physically let it go, speak it and say it, because I've been in the same city with my brother, I've been at meetings, I'm free. He's not. I am. He's still where he is. And wherever that is, that's not my concern. But I know that I have released that, and I don't carry that. And do you know, let me just tell you how precious this gift is that God gave me of forgiveness and letting go. There are people that get mad at me now. They can't. They say, you ought to still be running to kill him. You ought to still be wanting to expose him. And my thing is, the word says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Romans, God gave this to me many years ago when I was being set free of this thing with my brother and father. Well, Romans, the 12th chapter, verses 16 through 21, and made me know that if you let me have it, I will take care of it. And that's what I did. And I released it. And you might want to read that. And you may already know that scripture. But see, that's where I get my hope and my strength is in the Word. And having that strength, it just gives me strength to know and be able to go forth. But the Word is my bound. It's my the thing that gives me that courage to know that I'm on the right track, and to know that Jesus loved. Think about all of his enemies. He could have wore them out in a just with the bat of his eye, but he didn't do it. He took it.
Right.
And that's the lesson that I've learned.
Right. We have a caller.
Oh.
Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello,
are you there? Hello?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Do you have a question or a comment?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Do you have a question or a comment?
Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Okay. Yes, I'm just joining in.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize for being so late, but I heard your guest saying that vengeance is mine, says the Lord, and that you have to have forgiveness in your heart. When you've been sexually abused as a child, like I was, and it took me years, well, my father died before I even forgave him. I think my father stopped molesting me from the kindergarten to about the third grade. And I didn't really forgive him until I was like 37 or 38 after going to a psychiatrist, talking to a psychiatrist. But that's not what I needed was the psychiatrist. I needed God in my life, which I didn't have in my life. Because I was like, if God loved me, how could he allow my own dad to do this to me?
Exactly.
So But I
did. Sister, you're right on. That's you came in after I've been talking about forgiveness, and that's how God set me free, is when I forgave my father, forgave my brother, released him. But he told me in doing that, I released that spirit of anger and that murdering spirit that I had towards my father and brother. And that's when that scripture came in. You came in when I was at the end of the conversation. So, yes, you're so right. I'm so thankful that you were able to do that and to get to where you are at least now and not still carry that pain and that anger.
Oh, no, I don't carry it. And you know, a lot of times when I married my husband, I told my husband my life story. My husband told me, you know, you're a strong woman. You're a strong woman.
Yes.
Most women
yep.
would be crazy by now. I mean, after being sexually abused by my dad for so many years, and then when I reached the age of 19, I was raped by two men at gunpoint. I'm very thankful and very blessed. For one, God kept me here for a reason. For
yes.
two,
yes. Yes.
I do have forgiveness in my heart. And my third one is, I'm glad I didn't turn the other way. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
I'm
amen.
Glad I'm doing
amen.
Just what God intended for me to do.
Yeah.
Not for me to I'm not bashing anybody, but
no,
not
no,
for
no,
me
no.
To fall
thankful.
In love with the opposite sex because I'm that angry or I'm that afraid of men, which I love men regardless what my dad did, what those two guys did. You know, it wasn't every man. I'm just thankful for that. That I didn't
and
turn
sister,
that way.
You are so special. My wife shares the same thing. There's so many women who could have been like what you said, but those like you who chose to realize it's not every man, like I realize it's not every father that does what he does and every brother that does, and for me to be able to love women. And, hey, I'm thankful God wired me as he did. I'm
yeah.
even thankful that he allowed me to go through those very painful experiences so that I could be here today to stand up and talk to men in love and understanding and let them know that so many who are still in pain, who are still angry, still just all a mess, that you can be free and you can live your life out in the hope of Jesus.
Yes.
I hope that... Sister Delicious, that you let people know about my book and how they can get it. It's, you know, it's available to go to my
right.
website and pick a book up because I'm going to have to go pretty soon, and I really want them to
right.
know that this
okay.
book is written about love. It's about love and about joy, and it's about reconciliation,
mm-hmm.
hope.
Okay. You want to say where they can get it from because it's in the chat room, but for those who are not in the chat room or just listening, you can say where they can get your book from, Dr. Drew.
And it's the book, it's really simple, really easy. If you go to the website, the three W's, of course, the name of the book, of course, is Teddy Bear Stolen Innocence.
Ooh.
And the website is in... Huh?
I said they gave me chills.
The
yeah,
website
Teddy Bear
is
stolen.
Innocence, that's correct. And the website is incest, I-N-C-E-S-T, in blackamerica.com.
.com.
Uh-huh. Incest in America.com. And the reason we wrote it is because when I wrote my first book, Don't Say a Word About This, if you go to drdue.com, that's an easier one even, drdue.com, that's my website, my first one, I read over 400 books, and five of those books literally said that black people were not even worth talking about. We weren't worth doing the research. And
what?
That's when I knew I had to, yes, literally said by these researchers that people, we were animals. And I knew that something had to be said about our people and the fact that, yes, incest is, it's alive today in America.
Ooh,
it's alive
yes,
when
it
I
is.
Was a kid. I got a call just last week confirming all kind of stuff. Somebody I've never met, but they know. And so, yeah, it's real. So incest in black America.com. Mm-hmm. And it's there on for $9.95. It's a paperback, and it'll be autographed, and it's yours, plus, of course, shipping.
Right. Okay. How old were you? Is that a picture of you on Teddy Bear, Stolen Innocence?
That's my picture when I was a little kid. That sure is.
How old were you?
You know, I don't even know. I
you
have
were
another
a cutie.
Story about it. Oh, Lord. I'm going to put my baby picture out there, too, because mm-hmm. that'll get some people to understand this whole thing of my sister. My sister is a great woman. They said I was a beautiful baby, and they wanted to take me to Hollywood because we lived in Southern
mm-hmm.
California. And I don't know what happened, whatever happened, but yeah, I said that you're good looking. I said, oh, I don't see it. I never felt good looking, but that's what people say.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
you know what? I feel the same way. People tell me I'm a very attractive woman, but I think that has something to do with that too, with our innocence being taken, because I've never felt like I was a. I just never felt beautiful. I just never felt good about myself. Maybe that's part of the stigma of what happened to me. But
mm-hmm.
like I said, I love men. I don't hold any grudges. I always looked at my dad was that, well, maybe what he done to me, somebody in his family had did it to him because he came from a family of 12 brothers and sisters. So out of all them, somebody had to do something to him in order for him to do something like that to me, you understand? And so that puts a lot of the forgiveness in my heart. So.
Well, now, I'm glad you said that because I don't get to it in this book, but a new book will be coming out soon. I was able to trace my family back, my dad's family, back to 1852 and
mm-hmm.
to 1879 when they came off the plantation. And I found out through research and talking with different ones that my father's grandfather, he was raised with them because his mother died. My father's mother died when he was six, and he was raised on the farm with all of those people. And his grandfather, my father's grandfather, had sex with, there were 16 kids. One died, 15 lived, 4 and 11 were girls.
How did you find that out?
Through
Dr. Duke.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I was able to do that research through our family matriarch. And so, yeah, we were able to go back. Yes,
Dr. Duke, we have less than a minute to go. We're
oh,
going to have right. to have you back
man.
On the show. Yeah, the time went by so fast, but I will be, you know, hoping you'll come back on the show again so we
yeah,
can finish
back,
this up. Yeah, it was
I'll
very
glad
interesting
to come back
show.
Whenever I can, I'll be more than happy because I know
okay.
there's a lot of people hurting, and God wants
right.
you to be free. He wants you to be free today and enjoy life.
Right. And Dr. Du has a show on Blog Talk as well. And with that being said, thank you, everybody, for coming out. Have a beautiful weekend. Thank you, Dr. Du. You have a beautiful weekend as well. And everybody, good night.
Good night. Nice talking
good
to
night.
You.
Good night. Oh, my pleasure. And look forward to getting your request for the book.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
God bless. Bye. Bye-bye.
Good night. Good night, everybody.